Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name, you will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey everybody, welcome in once again. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. It's the story of wrestling in America, as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring, back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall, tree-top tall, with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Hey, Ron, we woke up a little bit cool here in Southeast Alabama this morning.
I bet I'm a little cooler than you, my man.
What did it go to?
Hey, we got to 32 last night.
Whoa, yeah, no, that's not cool. That's cold.
Yeah, yeah.
We were cool. I think we were at like 47 this morning here in the Dothan area.
Yeah, well, what's happened here, man, is those kind of days start turning the leaves.
Indeed. You guys get maybe in the Knoxville area, maybe one, maybe two snows per year?
Yeah, we get a couple of them at least, have been. And, thank goodness that's a little ways off, I hope.
Yeah, yeah. We get maybe one per decade, and that'll be about maybe every other decade in some cases. Hey, I tell you what, your studcasts, Ron, are becoming just as hot as your Southeastern territory in 1980, about the time Southeastern Gulf Coast became the only Southeastern territory after the Georgia promoters sold the Southeastern Knoxville territory to Ric Flair and Blackjack Mulligan, and they dropped the Southeastern name entirely.
Yeah, that's basically correct, Dave. And that happened in October 1980. And that made the Southeastern Territory down in Alabama and on the Florida Panhandle the only Southeastern Territory in the country, or in the world, as a matter of fact. It was like... What happened is the old territory that my father had created in 1954 and named the Gulf Coast Territory at this point was Southeastern Wrestling and the only Southeastern. Business was on fire, man, and we entered October 1980 in this studcast in particular. Even more full of history this one is than I think the last four or five have been, and that's saying a lot. Because I think we've been covering a lot of ground and a lot of history.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how you can continue to cram any more history into a studcast than what you've been doing lately. And lately, we have been postponing things you have added until the next studcast. In fact, I can't even recall everything left over from last week that's going to go into this studcast.
Well. Thank goodness that's not your responsibility, Dave. So I make some notes each week, man, as we ride along and then we're talking about each studcast, about what I promised from the week before to make sure that I don't forget, and because I always want to go back and be able to finish the thoughts I was having in the last studcast and what I'd promised that we were going to talk about basically in this one.
Yeah. All right. Listen, I have to say, there is so much information now being poured out of your history bucket each week that I'm having a hard time keeping up with you. I mean, anybody that knows you would have a hard time keeping up with you. All right, so where are we riding today, stud?
Well, before we start today, I want to thank all those fans that have asked how my brother, Rob, fared in the recent Hurricane Milton. You know, a lot of people love old Rob, and they were asking, you know, how he and his family were doing, and how did they get through it. And actually, they ended up very well. They ended up just fine. So they got very little damage, which was really, really, I thought, amazing from where they live. So I'm hopeful, obviously, that they don't have another one that should soon on its way. I mean, two of them in 2 weeks is a wow.
Yeah.
Pretty horrible.
Yeah.
We're going to start back, man, in the last studcast with a very interesting ride into Birmingham, which in late September 1980 was less than 2 months away from their first ever Southeastern event. We had done so much already to prepare there, and there was still so much more to do.
Okay, but wait just a second, Stud. I do remember something from last week you promised to get back to in this studcast. You told us that Rob had been picked by the Georgia promoters to be their new booker, and I'm pretty sure you said he would be replacing Ole Anderson. What's going on with that?
Attaboy, Dave. You got it right. I did say that. And, and I'd like to get to the rest of that fantastic story today, and I will. But we're also going to talk about the upcoming arrival of the NWA World Champion, Harley Race, with two other world champions on the same card, and how difficult it was to set up that type of card, and how rare it was to even have a card that had three world champions on it. So also today, we're going to introduce the weekly card that was going to lead us up to those historical triple main events. We're going to talk about a little bit about those triple main events. So the world title cards for the next studcast. I will also discuss the TV show promoting the weekly card and the result of that, the card, its matches, the attendances as we usually do in all the three major markets. And after all that, hopefully, we may have time to get in another learning tree question.
Okay, so I mean, I hate to say it, but with all that, I have a hard time believing we are going to get a learning tree question into all this. But let's get started and let's see how far we get, and let's see if we can get it in there.
Okay, so we'll begin with a meeting in Birmingham's Bowell Auditorium, which was the home for Birmingham wrestling for basically 50 years almost with my grandfather, and Nick Gulas came along a little bit later. By 1980, it had been there, you know, for more than 40 years. So it turned out the executives there were as excited about what was about to happen with bringing wrestling back to the city and to that building as they could be. And since they were true fans of the sport, they'd been watching our Southeastern TV shows for the last 5 months since we started. We bought it in May of 1980, and we started putting Southeastern shows on immediately. And they were very impressed with our TV show's format, for one thing, having never before seen a personality profile in a wrestling show. They'd never seen split screen shots in a wrestling show. They'd never seen instant replays at the end of matches. So, you know, kind of blew them away what we were doing on TV. And they said it was far superior to anything they'd ever seen before. And then they said, and so are the wrestlers, you know, and they had never seen a lot of these wrestlers. Bob Armstrong, they'd never seen the Mongolian Stomper. They'd never seen Joe the Duke. They had seen Ron Bass, Jimmy Golden, and Rob, you know, because they had worked a lot for Nick and Roy up in the Tennessee territory before we started Southeastern down there. On the Gulf Coast. But they had also seen our billboards, man. The first ones that had seen them, that they had ever seen, they basically said, we've never seen anybody do this. And they said, we never saw a billboard ever, any of us, that had anything to do with promoting wrestling. And they loved the fact that not only were we promoting wrestling, the Boutwell Auditorium and the first event was on that billboard as well, along with the information promoting the two TV stations that we had going in the market at that time. And all this basically proved our commitment to bringing back big time wrestling every Monday night to one of the greatest wrestling venues in history, the Boutwell Auditorium in Birmingham, Alabama. So there had been no wrestling in that building since the end of 1979.
Wow.
After Mick Gulas had shut it down. Then that was following almost 2 years of terrible crowds that they were drawing there. After Nick made his son, George Gulas, his champion, and basically it killed his territory.
All right. So, I mean, it sounds like a very successful meeting with the building executives. I picked up on one thing that I was not aware of. Wasn't Montgomery running on those Monday nights at that time? So, and if so, what did you do about that?
You know, we're going to make Birmingham had been a Monday town for, gosh, for 40 years. So, you know, and I'd already met with the executives of the beautiful Montgomery City Civic Center. They had a beautiful facility there, and they understood the significance of having almost 8,000 seats in Boutwell Auditorium as compared to their smaller building, and also the fact that it was Birmingham, the biggest city in the state, and they basically had no problem with moving the wrestling night from Mondays to Wednesdays. And actually, they even said, we'll make sure that we do it on the opening night that you run in Boutwell. We'll change our nights without a problem. So next, I want to talk about the deal that was in the process of being made with Robert to become that next booker for the Georgia territory. And that's a deal that I should that should have been run by me before any discussion with Rob. So they were kind of jumping ahead of the game there.
Okay, but I mean, this is what I've been waiting for. Was your father responsible for this happening?
That's a very good question, though. But rather than I think ask the controversial question that. Let's maybe tear that could possibly tear the family apart. I think there was a better question that was this going to be a bad deal or a good deal for our company? So let's do a little short history here, Dave, of the Bookers in the southeastern Gulf Coast from when it opened in 1978, which was long before we talked, this potential deal with Rob going to book the Georgia territory. So Bob and I booked the territory starting in 1978 when Southeastern Gulf Coast opened up. But when Bob and I went back to Knoxville in late 1978, Rob was sent there. He was in Knoxville down to handle the Gulf Coast booking. But that was about the same time that Memphis and my father got involved, and Rob ended up going to Memphis and taking quite a few of our better talent with him, and had to hire Louis Tillett to replace Rob, I'm sorry. And Louis booked down there for much of 1979. Rob replaced Louis in October of 1979. And for the first time in 1980, since we had opened that company, all five of the owners of the territory down there were finally in the territory at the same time. And Rob and I had handled all that booking in 1980 as we progressed. So that kind of brings us back to the deal for Rob to potentially book Georgia. Shortly before any talk at all, about Rob going to Georgia, Rob and I sat down and we mapped out a schedule of who was going to be doing the booking in the future and what years they were going to have that responsibility for. So, and we agreed that in order for us not to wear out our welcome with the fans and by doing that hurt the territory, that we should not wrestle there in the territory, any of us, for more than a year at a time. That made a lot of sense. A lot of territories really had problems because they kept guys years after year after year. And the guys lost their popularity. So we had agreed that the bookers should also alternate every other year, and that Bob wanted to work with me because that's the way we started in 1978. Mm-hmm. Worked out well. And then we would book those alternating years when Rob was off. So Rob was going to handle it. Bob and I would handle the next year. So we were almost finished, obviously, with 1980 at this point. And Rob had been there the longest at that point. And so Bob and I agreed to take 1981 as our first full year booking. Rob agreed then to take 1982 and that we would alternate those years from there on out.
Hmm. Okay, I'm curious. Is that how other wrestling companies did it? Did they function the same way?
Well, practically all wrestling companies had their own way, man, of handling bookers. Most owners did not do their own booking at all. They hired their bookers. And I, however, had learned a very valuable lesson when it came to hiring bookers. Remember Bob Roop? I wasn't going there again, man. It cost me basically a territory. So after our booking scheduling conversation, and this idea arose from Rob to book Georgia, the three of us talked about the fact that we were nearing the end of 1980. We had agreed Rob's first year that he was going to book Southeastern was not going to be until 1982. So obviously he was going to need someplace to go to work and someplace to make money on those off years. So why would we not let him go? You know, if he wanted to go and take the job as booker in Georgia. So then we also thought that he could not only make money for wrestling there, but obviously he's going to get a separate check each week for booking. So it was a really good deal for him. But a longer conversation between us it turned out to be maybe better for the company, too. So there was always also the benefit to all of us that could come from that, with Rob going there as the booker, because we were only one state away from Georgia. Birmingham was 200 miles from Atlanta. It was closer to Atlanta than it was Pensacola, where our offices were. So Rob could occasionally send us, if he took the job, some of Georgia's top stars. And if the Georgia owners wanted him badly enough, they'd probably agree with that. They would go, well, geez, in order to get Rob to come here, I mean, yeah, we could send some guys over there, without a problem. So the Georgia wrestling stars were already over everywhere in our territory, not just our territory, but because they were on the Atlantis, the Ted Turner satellite station, they were over in every territory in the country because it was one of those first big cable channels mm-hmm. that got picked up, right? And basically, because it was satellite, you weren't just a star when you were in Atlanta and you're a star anywhere in America. You were a star anywhere in the world because it was seen all over the world.
Yeah.
So we all three decided if Rob wanted to go, he would bring up the booking swap with us, as a part of the deal when he talked to the Georgia people. So when Rob was not leaving until the night, Rob was going to stay until the night that Birmingham opened. We agreed to that. And Rob and I had this diabolical angle figured for that particular night.
Okay. That's a remarkable story, Stud. Amazing that something that seems so bad in the beginning, I guess you would say, when you first heard of it, ended up being something great for everybody involved, it seems like. All right, Ryan, so can you tell us about how you set up the triple world championship matches that are coming in the next Studcast?
Well, Jay, I had already, man, had one of those mega cards. I booked a three world title match event in Knoxville years earlier. But this time, I was going to do more than one of them. And I was going to try to do five of them spread over a 9-night period of time, have five of these triple world championship events. I started working on this 8 months in advance of when these events are going to actually happen. I started with, and it all kind of started with Harley Race, who for years in our small territories had only been able to get Harley for one night basically at a time, and one night only in each of the two territories. So basically, if he stayed two nights, he worked Knoxville one, and he worked somewhere down the southeastern Gulf Coast on the second one. So this would have never worked in Tennessee. I mean, the idea of doing five events, because these cards were going to happen because of the success we were having in the territory at that point, you know, in four major cities. We had four major cities down in the Gulf Coast territory compared to just one major city in the Tennessee territory, Knoxville itself. So we were in September of 1980 drawing crowds as big as most of the major territories. Harley and I talked about it. We worked a match in February of 1980 in Mobile, Alabama. And we had 10,300 people in attendance for that match. And after the match, I had the chance to sit down and talk to Harley. And he told me, he said, "Ron, your crowds here in this city of like 200,000 population," he says, "your crowds are some of the biggest and some of the greatest wrestling cities in America. You're drawing what they draw in Houston, Texas, and St. Louis, Missouri."
Wow.
200,000 population city of Mobile.
Wow.
So I asked him then, I'd been thinking about doing these on these triple main events. So I asked him then if he could help me to get Sam Muchnick to let me have him for more than just one day at a time. I told him that I wanted to do five triple world title events over a 9-day period of time. And so with him, that would be him as the NWA world champion. There would be Les Thornton as the world junior champion and the world's ladies champion, Fabulous Moolah. And I told him, and I sat and thought about it, I ran the figures. I told him I thought we could draw 35,000 people in 5 nights. So he got extremely excited about the idea, right? And he loved the payoffs that he always got from me. And so he promised. He said, "When I go back and see Sam in a few days, I got to go to St. Louis." He said, "I'll talk to Sam about your idea and see what he thinks." Hmm. So he basically called me back about a week later, and he said, "Ron, not only did Sam give me the dates," he goes, "I'm going to give you the dates."
Wow.
So he gave me the dates, which were in November of 1980, which is going to be next week's Studcast time. 8 months after we had this conversation, Sam committed to sending him there for 5 nights in November of 1980.
Wow. I mean, that is a plan that was, and now you had the confidence of one of the best ever to step in the ring, to step into Sam Muchnick's office and speak on your behalf. So all of this is going to take place, not in this Studcast, but in next week's Studcast, if I got that right. All right. So can you give us the card for this week's Studcast in the first week? Let's go to the first week of October of 1980.
Okay. So, Rob and I talked about doing an angle, basically an angle within the angle. The regional champion in every territory always got the shot at the world champion when the world champion came in. If you had the title in Florida, you got the shot. If you was in Georgia, it didn't make any difference. Whatever territory, whoever your champion was, usually got to wrestle against the world heavyweight champions. So me and Rob got to talking about, you know, Harley had good heat, but we started saying, how could we put more heat on Harley than what he already has? Because you only got him very seldom, you know, and then this gave us an opportunity having five nights with him to really do something special. So we started to think about how could we make it appear that he was so worried about me winning the belt from him, you know, that he had his good friend. We got to thinking about it. We got our commissioner, Don Curtis. Don Curtis is a good friend of Harley. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, so we got the one idea led to another. And so, you know, he said, what if Don Curtis was to deny me the title shot at Harley after I'd already beaten the Stomper, which happened the week before? I'd won the right to wrestle against Harley. But all of a sudden, Don Curtis says, instead of you getting the automatic shot, we're going to have a tournament to see who's going to wrestle against Harley. So to make that happen, you know, Don Curtis was booking Southeastern the one-night tournament to find the opponent to get the shot at Harley. And that fact was going to be basically a complete surprise to me. When we get to this television program and this studcast, fans will see how all this was done. But the card was an NWA World Championship night. It was a 16-man tournament. It was going to have 15 matches in all, and the winner was going to be facing Harley Race.
Wow, and that's a great idea, too. And if anybody pays attention to these studcasts and my little part, they know I'm a huge Harley Race fan. And to me, booking Harley Race back in the day was equal with booking Andre the Giant. Not that this is just a great idea. All right, so although Harley had a ton of heat, his pulling strings to avoid you was going to add to that heat. So, all right, set us up with the tournament. Who is in the tournament to see if Harley could avoid a title defense with you?
First round of the tournament, I was going to have to defend the Southeastern title. I was going to be in the first round of the tournament against the Mongolian Stomper, who I'd beat for the championship the week before to get the shot at Harley. Now I got to defend the Southeastern championship in that first round match against the Mongolian Stomper. When I won the title, Big C was barred from being at ringside.
Right.
Not only am I going to have to defend the title against him in the first round of the tournament, but Big C is going to be in his corner again.
So the odds are slightly stacked against you.
Yeah. So it's like, wow, geez. That's really pushing it. You know, having a tournament was pushing it, but that was really pushing it. Second match in the tournament was Bob Armstrong. He was going to be going up against Ron Bass. Charlie Cook was facing off with the Super Pro. Ricky Gibson was wrestling Big C number one. Joe LeDuc was wrestling Big C number two. Norvell Austin was competing with Billy Spears. Plowboy Frazier, seconded by Floyd, was facing Rob. But if Plowboy lost against Rob, Floyd was going to have to leave Southeastern, and then there we'll see the reason for that particular match as we get further along here. Ricky Fields, he was returning. He hadn't wrestled in quite a while, and he's wrestling a newcomer, Iron Mike Masters. The winner of the tournament the following week was going to face the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Harley Race.
Wow. I mean, what a great one-night world championship tournament. All right, it's a good spot to take a break. Let's do that. And when we return, we're going to be talking about the TV show that promoted this big card. Hey, we're just getting going, just getting warmed up. This Studcast will continue in a moment. All right, Studcast fans, how about a little update? Things are going smoothly with Ron's project that he's been working on diligently working on for some time. every studcast we do today brings us closer to Ron's dream of continuing his weekly studcast and the card for it with the actual TV show produced for that card 44 years ago. It will allow us to go back in time and relive parts of the TV shows combined with today's studcast that together will tell a truly amazing story. So, something truly beautiful is on the way. Stay tuned. All right, let's keep going with this studcast. We got a good one right here, so welcome back. This studcast is number 370. I am David Summers here with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Ron's name is in the title today. The title is called Ron Wins Tournament to Face Harley Race. And that is exactly what the TV show we're about to discuss was all about. And I guess you would say the title has a little bit of a spoiler in it. All right, so how did the TV show open up, Stud? Set it all up for us, and let's get into it.
All right. This one opened with a video, and it was already in progress. It was probably the most important part of the match, and I was about to put the Fuller leg lock on the Mongolian Stomper. It was for the Southeastern Championship, and this is the one in which Big C was barred from ringside, nowhere to be found. And so when I got the hold on him, the sold-out building, which they were all sold out at this point, the buildings, it exploded. And for a change, nobody came to the Mongols' rescue. I mean, nobody, not Bass, not anybody. And so within seconds, he knew that it was over. I mean, he I could break his leg if I needed to, and I would have probably done it, to get that shot at Harley. So he, within seconds, he gave up, and he just laid there, and they went and got the belt and handed it to me, and the building was going crazy, and that win should have instantly awarded me the right to face the NWA World Champion Harley Race when he arrived in Southeastern, which was going to be 10 days later. So the next shot was me sitting at the set with Charlie, and I had my Southeastern belt on the desk in front of me. And this shot got another roar, but this time from the studio crowd. And Charlie welcomed me as the new Southeastern champion. And, I said I was very proud of this victory, and it had been a long time coming and a long time since the Stomper had lost the belt. And then I jumped right away into, and Charlie, this gives me the right to face Harley Race for the NWA world title when he gets to Southeastern. And Charlie gave me this kind of strange look. And then he asked me, he says, are you not aware that Don Curtis has booked a one-night world championship tournament coming up next week to name a challenger for Harley? I was like, so I asked Charlie, is that a joke? Right? I mean, you can't be serious, are you? And so I told him, and almost of all the wrestling companies in the world, the regional champion always, almost automatically is entitled to the world title shot. So Charlie apologized for me not getting the news. But he told me, he said, I was invited to be with him today on the personality profile because I didn't know, and he wanted to hear what this is all about, too. So and he said, we'll discuss this upcoming world title tournament. Hmm. So I was totally shocked. And that just wasn't supposed to happen. I mean, champion always got the title shot. So Charlie kind of invited me to stay with him. But I was so blown away, I just kind of got up and walked away from the set without saying a word. I was like, I couldn't figure out what the heck, man. How come I didn't know about this? And then I even forgot to take the belt. I left my belt laying on the desk with him.
Wow. Okay. What a way to start a show. So Charlie kind of took the wind out of your sails with that announcement. All right. Who was in the first TV match, Stud?
Well, it was the Mongolian Stomper. And for a change, he didn't attack the studio crowd. And you could almost see a smile on his face, and Big C, too. Both of them heard the news that Charlie just gave to me. And so, they were like, wow, this is great. I mean, he's not going to get the shot. So Big C didn't even get to the ring. He didn't even get into the ring. Stomper went right into the ring, and Big C headed right straight for the set, man, where he had just left the set. So he felt like, well, I can go right over there and say what I want to. So he was already talking before the bell rang for the first match, and he was obviously totally elated to hear that his Mongol was going to get a chance to not only get the belt back, you know, he was going to be, I was going to defend against him for the belt as well. So after he won that tournament, he said he's going to get the shot at the world champion, Harley Race, my man, the Mongolian Stomper. So Big C said the only reason that I beat him and beat his champion is because he got barred from ringside. And he says, now the promoters, you know, Charlie, looks like they're realizing their mistake, and they've seen to it that they're going to let me be there to help my Mongol. So Charlie said, Charlie always had this. He was always having these problems with Big C, with Carson. You know, he said, that's exactly why you should never be allowed at ringside. He goes, for the very reason that you just said. You just said your being there has always been to help your mom.
Well, duh.
So he continued. He continued and gigging him, man. And he, you know, and he asked Big C if he had anything to do with this tournament. You go, you know, and why this tournament was even scheduled to begin with. Charlie said, now he's like me. He's like, wait, what's going on here? You know, why is there a tournament? You know, Ron. And then he just laid it out. He said, you know, Ron Fuller deserves this upcoming NWA title shot at Harley Race. And there's something going on here, he said to Big C. And he says, you know, with this tournament. And he says, it stinks. And then he said, it smells like you, Don. So the Stomper, he was wrapping up his destruction of another poor decimated opponent in the ring. And so Big C got out the last few words. And he said, Charlie, you have picked the wrong team to be on.
No.
He said, Ron Fuller's tournament match, he says, is against my Stomper. And it's also a championship match. And Ron Fuller will not beat my Stomper because he can, because I'm going to be at ringside. So Stomper will win his belt back from Ron Fuller, and Fuller won't be wrestling Harley Race when Harley comes to Southeastern. And he says, and I'm also going to be talking to Harley today so I can give him the good news.
All right. Those comments by the Big C were very prophetic. So there was definitely something going on behind the scenes. So who is in the next segment of that TV show?
Charlie Cook, Norvell Austin, Ricky Gibson. They all joined Charlie at the set as the returning Super Pro was wrestling on TV for the first time in 9 months. You know, and his return oddly took place now just coincidentally 2 weeks after Randy Rose lost to Bob Armstrong in a loser leaves Southeastern match. Here comes the Super Pro, kind of out of nowhere. So fans saw the uncanny resemblance, obviously, between Randy Rose and the Super Pro, and especially considering the Super Pro had a mask on that had a rose over each ear. Right? You know, why would you do that, right? So everywhere he went, as soon as he arrived back on the scene as the Super Pro, entire crowds just kept screaming, Randy, 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 during his whole match, right? Because they wanted to make sure that Randy knew that they recognized him under that mask. So Charlie Cook wrestling against the Super Pro in the first round of the tournament. He acknowledged that the fans recognized who Randy Rose was, hiding under a mask, and they were chanting Randy, Randy, Randy through the entire TV match that Super Pro was in.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, Super Pro, man, I tell you, Randy had a killer move. He was really the clothesline king And that's the way he won this TV match. He put a close line on a guy that, oh, it was awful looking, like he took his head off, man. So Ricky Gibson, you know, he was still at the set, and he mentioned his first tournament opponent was the Big C. And he, you know, and he said, who fans know really is Don Carson, right, wearing a mask. He says, not only are you having to deal with one, Charlie, that the people know, I'm going to deal with one that the people know who he really is. And then Norvell Austin, he was there too. He talked briefly about his first tournament match against his opponent. And basically, I guess, you know, you'd have to call Billy Spears as at least unpredictable, if not a lot worse.
The unpredictable Billy Spears. Okay. All right. So I guess it was personality profile time. And I think you said Charlie invited you earlier in the show to be on this personality profile.
Yeah, he did when he found out I didn't know about this tournament. So so he had me, you know, he had my belt with him. He took the belt over to the profile set. And so he handed me my belt. And I had taken some time to think. In the meantime, between the time the show started and got to the profile about this tournament. And I was a lot more prepared to talk about it at that point. So Charlie started off with the fact that I had never really considered, this. He had done some research, he said, and he found out that I had wrestled Harley Race 7 times for the NWA world title since 1977.
Wow.
5 of those 7 matches had ended in 1 hour time limit draws. So he said, Ron, obviously, you and Harley are very competitively matched, which is a good word.
Yeah.
Competitively matched. And so he brought up the possibility that because I stood a very good chance of one of these nights finally winning a world title match from Harley, did I think there was any possibility of Harley conspiring with somebody in the Southeastern Wrestling Company to limit my opportunities to possibly win his belt?
Charlie came up with this. All right. So did you think there could be anything to that? Or what did you think?
Well, I almost fell out of the profile chair. I was kind of speechless, you know, because I hadn't thought about that, you know. So my mind started racing in all directions as soon as he said this. So I asked myself, you know, who would do such a thing? Who is behind this tournament? So there was only one person, and that was not a part of our company. The only person that I could think of, and he was not a part of the owners of our company, but he was influenced and could be influenced by his good friend Harley Race, and that guy was Don Curtis, Southeastern Commissioner. Wow. He was the figurehead for the company. And like I said, a close friend of Harley Race. So then I remembered back to this big match. And I think you said you went to this match, Dave, in 1978 when the Hulk wrestled Harley Race for the world title in the Dothan High School football stadium.
Yep.
It was sold out. And there was a lot of talk going on around about everybody there about people on the inside talked about that somebody might have been stealing money at the gate that night. Don Curtis was there because it was such a big event and was very upset about it, along with about half the wrestlers on the card. And Charlie Pratt had even given me a call that night in Knoxville to tell me about what had gone on and how specifically Don Curtis had acted. So Don Curtis was really, really upset, terribly upset, you know, and more than anybody else. And he said, I couldn't figure out what that was all about. So this was not what I ever expected or even wanted. With all these triple world cards coming up, you know, I didn't need to be here about this stuff. So So I changed the subject, you know, and I started talking about someone mysteriously setting up this one-night tournament after I had already been beaten. I'd already beaten the Stomper for the Southeastern title and earned my shot at Harley. Mm-hmm. And that since this was a done deal, that I was not going to let anybody stop me from becoming the next world champion. You know, I just put the focus on this tournament, this go-ahead, because it couldn't be changed at this point. So all I had to do, I said, was defend my belt, win this tournament, and then nobody could stop me from beating Harley Race, no matter what they did at that point. And I said the studio crowd sitting on the bleachers with right next to the personality profile set where Charlie and I were, well, they dug that. They liked that line. And so I stood up and I took my belt. I held it up over my head and I turned toward the studio crowd. And I said, I'm going to defend this belt next week. I'm going to win the tournament next week. And the week after that, I'm going to win the 10 pounds of gold from Harley Race. And I'm going to become the next world heavyweight champion. I walked off the set, you know, and when I did, there was nobody sitting on the bleachers. They were all standing, man. It was a big time standing ovation.
Wow. Okay, so it sounds like another one of those memorable personality profiles over the last month or so. All right, so set up the next segment on the TV show. Who was on that?
So Robert and Joe LaDuca had joined Charlie at the set after the profile. They got a big welcome from the studio fans. They watched the video of the Southeastern Tag Championship match from the week before against the new champions, Big C 1 and 2. And the video opened up with Joe LaDuca on the outside of the ring on top of Big C, wailing him, and the referee had gone outside to try to pull him off of him. And Rob was inside the ring, had Big C in the corner, and he was blasting him with some big old right hands. And so Floyd, of all people, made a rare appearance, not just at ringside, but inside the ring. And he ran across the ring, and he dived around Rob's feet, was holding his feet. And Big C had an opportunity to load his glove, and he hit Rob with a loaded glove. Plowboy, who was a lot bigger and slower than Floyd, finally made his way into the ring, and Rob was laying there. He'd been plastered by Big C, and so Floyd just ran. I mean, Big Plowboy ran across the ring, hit the ropes, came off, and he crashed down on top of Rob, all 440 pounds. And him and Plowboy and Floyd, they got out of the ring just as fast as they had gotten to the ring, And the referee ended up getting back into the ring, and Big C was on top of Rob and counted him out.
All right, so set us up on the third match. Who was in the ring for that?
Well, Big C 1 and 2 with their tag belts went to the ring, but only Big C 2 was going to be wrestling since this was a tournament coming up. There were going to be all single matches and no tag matches. I guess, you know, we set up this show to have just single matches on it. And so they were going to be obviously in single matches the next week. Big C2 stepped out on the floor to watch his partner, and Rob and Joe remained at the set. And when that match started, Rob had his opportunity to ask Charlie, he said, Charlie, why is my brother getting this treatment, you know? Why were they having this tournament, you know? And after he just won the belt, and that's supposed to ensure him a shot at Harley, kind of went back through that process again of discussing what's going on here. And Charlie obviously didn't have an answer, so he thanked Southeastern. Rob did, you know, he was not going to discontinue along that line of, because he could see it wasn't going anywhere. So he thanked Southeastern for giving him the opportunity of getting rid of Floyd in this first round match that he was going to have with Plowboy. All he had to do was beat Plowboy. If Plowboy didn't win, Rob won, Floyd was going to have to leave. And the attention went back to the ring about that time. Big C2, a great tag team wrestler, Jerry Brown, was giving his opponent a real wrestling lesson. And Joe LeDuc jumped in saying he was looking forward to his first round match against the man in the ring, who was Big C2. He said, I can't believe I kind of have an opportunity, Charlie, to maybe get to wrestle Harley Race. So, everybody's talking about the tournament at this point.
Okay, so how about the last match? Set that one up for us.
Well, that was a fan favorite, Bob Armstrong. And Charlie was joined at the set by Bob's first round opponent in this tournament, Ron Bass. And this was going to be the second week in a row with Ron Bass against Bob Armstrong. Bass had nothing but Bass was at the set with Charlie, and he had nothing but nasty comments about Bob. He even called Bob sleeper hold. Bob got the sleeper on the guy he was wrestling, and Bass said, that's a chokehold. That's not a sleeper hold. Bob Armstrong don't have a sleeper hold. He just has a chokehold. So there's a little controversy being created there too.
Wow, there you go. Another great TV. Absolutely. I think you either talk to almost all 16 wrestlers in the tournament or had them wrestling on the show, if not. All right, so to me, amazing how you managed that. So what happened in the arenas the following week, the week before the triple world title cards?
Well, I won all three tournaments that we wrestled in, four matches. We're going to have four matches in that first week that we're going to do these three world championships. And So we had tournaments in all three of those cities. And each one of those tournaments, in order to win the tournament, you had to wrestle four times, four different opponents.
Yeah.
So I had wrestled four nights in that one week before Harley got there. Against different opponents in each one of the finals of those. And, wow, it was a great way to get me in shape for Harley, I guess, a good way, wouldn't it?
A great way to get you in shape or kill you, one or the other. I don't know. Wow. All right, how about the attendance in the three major markets for the tournament nights?
Well, wrestling fans love these tournaments, man, especially ones where you had world titles matches at stake coming out of the tournament. So every building was full again, man. It was just amazing. We were in the middle of a phenomenal run, and we were looking at all-time records. We everybody knew once they heard what kind of card we had, all the wrestlers, that we were going to break all-time records the following week with those triple world crowns.
Wow. All right. As I predicted, after hearing everything you said at the beginning of the Studcast, that you were going to try to get it in today, we are not going to have enough time to get a learning tree question wedged into this thing, but I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with that, Ron, because you've taken us on a tremendous ride. And I can only imagine where we are headed on next week's Big Studcast.
Well, man, I can say this, Dave. It's definitely going to be one of the best Studcast ever, simply because of the impact of these events, man, with the triple world championships. And I'm almost certain that we set all-time records for the number of triple world title matches in one week. I don't ever remember many territories at all that ever had three world championship matches on one card anywhere in the world. And none of them are going to have four in one week. We were going to set records in more than just one way. We're definitely going to break every record for attendances too, man, in Southeastern history with these. And I'm going to do my best when we talk about this next week to compute the figures in advance for the crowd sizes. We're going to talk about the gross houses for the four events, how much each one of them produced in not only numbers, but in dollars. We're going to talk about Harley's payoffs for sure. Not just in that time frame, but not just what he made back in that time frame, but what it would be in today's money as well.
Yeah.
But we're going to do that thing that, you like, and I think a lot of other fans do as well. We're going to tally up the four shows, the first four of these five shows that we're going to have. And the beautiful thing about this is the fact that the fifth show, the final one of these triple world title cards, was not going to take place until the week after the four events had been done. And we'll be covering that next week. And I got to tell you, man, the main event for that fifth event, all the other four matches were 1 hour draws, but the main event for this fifth one, what happens in that match, I think is going to blow everybody's mind.
Wow. Listen, I absolutely cannot wait. And I love these, the backstage moments, the private moments, and one that you've talked about in years past, just a chill bump moment when you were doing the payoff with Harley in private in the dressing room, and the exchange that you two had is one of those that I'll never forget. I just thought it was so cool, that private moment with the baddest man on God's green earth. All right, so I absolutely cannot wait for the next Studcast. Hey, folks, you know how to get up with Ron on Facebook. Find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend. On Twitter or X, you can find Ron at Ron Fuller Welch and follow him there also. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com. This Studcast is going to be there with every Studcast ever done. His Stud Store is where you can get 43 Super Studcasts, four different 8x10 photos of the stud, his best-selling novel, Brutus, personally autographed to you all at tnstud.com. And subscribe to the YouTube channel, Southeastern Rewind. You can sit there for hours and hours and hours and not finish at all. Hundreds of hours of classic old school wrestling entertainment, 445 total videos. The last 148 Studcast are there. Ask the Stud shows, short rides with the Stud. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic Stud stories with worldwide stars. Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More fan question shows, superstars of the past shows, and so much more. It's Southeastern Rewind. That's YouTube, Southeastern Rewind. It is the best deal in wrestling. All right, final comments. Your turn, Stud.
Well, thanks, everybody, you know, for listening today. Really, really appreciate your support. And don't miss the next Studcast. And if you got friends that may have listened to him and haven't listened in a while, if you talk to him, the next one I think is going to be possibly the best that's ever been done, and it's going to be great. So please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955. On Twitter, now known as X, Dave_Doohan. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.